Okay, what I'm going to start with, sorry, I'm not hosting. So just for the listeners to know, Tunde is now the new host of Tales from the Plantation. Harry has now taken a sort of a backseat. I'm sort of like, you know.
Hold on, how come nobody asked me if I wanted to host?
Because you, everyone knows that you would not be the correct host for this podcast.
Why? I can ask very professionally when I want to.
But you don't want many a time.
I'm looking at you right now.
The reason I don't is because I occupy that space in the podcast for some, you know.
You occupy what space?
For some va-va-voom. But if you need me to set up a professional role, then I can.
I see.
Okay.
So the role you are bringing is the va-va-voom, je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, trust me. All the French phrases, c'est la vie, you know what I'm saying? Parce que, tout le monde, va-va...
Croissant.
You're listening to Tales from the Plantation with...
It's your girl, Nezzy.
Harry.
And Tunde. Leading you to freedom, one pod at a time.
No. So what I wanted to start... So I was talking to... I was talking to my wife about this. Khalees is actually one of the sickest artists of the 21st century.
Thank you for saying that.
We've spoken about this before. But like, when you think about Khalees, like she was... positioned as an R&B artist, but she's not really. When you think about the music that she makes, it's just so different. Like,
it's vibesy.
Like, that's, you know, Milkshake wasn't even a common R&B tune. It was like some weird Neptunes production. Like, then you had that Trick Me, then you had my favorite personally, which is Millionaire. Mama, I'm a millionaire.
And that's just her mainstream banger.
That's a mainstream. I know she's got bare other songs, but
All her other songs. Like, if you're a Khalees like fan who listens to her albums, she has so many just like interesting, fun songs. I saw her live last year, and I absolutely loved it. But I just love Khalees. Khalees is like my, when I was younger, just that kind of carefree, slightly quirky.
Carefree black woman.
Yeah, like that's
I mean, she's really leaning into that now with her farm aesthetic. Like,
trust.
She's living her life. And I think that is her and Andre 3000. Like, I think the two of them, just being able to go, I actually don't care what you want me to do.
A flute album, you know?
The whole album and the title's been like, I know you wanted a rap album, but I just wanted to let you know that I felt like doing a flute.
He's a joker. That's the thing. That's so peak. Man returned and everyone thought, Andre 3000's coming out with these crazy bars. He's going to murk it. He just said it's flute. It's just flute. But he's got like, he's so well known and respected that he's still got all the late night show bookings and went on there and just played this flute. And I really respect that he's staying true to his artistic, like, I don't know, his heart on what he wants to do.
Exactly. And I think for me, seeing those two, and I won't lie, I rushed to listen to that album. Like, I was in bed, I had the lights down, so I could enjoy, and I was like,
waiting for the bars like to drop.
What do you guys think about all the Christians who were like, it sounds demonic?
I haven't listened to it, so I don't know if it sounds demonic. But I guess David used a flute to play out the demon. You can use one to just, you know what I'm saying, ship one right in there. I don't know. Who knows?
That's crazy. I just think Christians need to relax, honestly.
I do.
That is why, just relax. They try to find demons in everything, and it's just weird. Are you a demonologist? Why are you seeking them out?
What are you talking about? Anyone
can set up their own job titles.
Sorry, but this is the other thing that, you know, progressive Christians try to do. They just ask ridiculous questions. Are you a demonologist, or are you? You don't need to be anything. They have their own conviction. You can have yours. They believe that there could be, they believe that it sounds demonic to them, and they don't have to listen to it. That's their business.
A demonologist is someone who studies demons. Like, demonology is a study of demons. A demonologist is somebody who studies demons. And that's what I mean.
Do Christians even believe in demonology like that?
They are. Oh, okay, first of all, this is what I mean.
Christians don't believe in demonologists. What are you talking about? Most Christians don't.
Harry just says things, right? But he's not actually thought this through. Demonology is the study of demons within religious belief and myth. Okay?
But that's not what a Christian does, though, right?
And that's why I said, are you a demonologist? Because my thing is, why are you so obsessed with demons?
But it's not, they're not obsessed. They're not obsessed, but they're saying, no, but I think it's, okay, but to me, I feel like it's logical for you to think, okay, if someone was possessed and an evil spirit was troubling him and he played something out, it's logical to assume it could happen the other way. That's not crazy to think. Harry, so you can't, you getting onto them about it is a bit like, well, no, that's just what they think.
It's not. It's because Andre 3000's album, like, what about it? The only reason they thought it might be demonic is because, I don't know, it was a fluke and it was in my piece. And there was nothing about it that suggested that it was demonic.
Why? Because anything they don't know.
They don't understand.
What's 3000? Yeah, but what's 3000? That's four digits. What does that mean? He's like, he's trying to be. He's like, oh, no, no. See, think about it. 3000. That's three, but there's three zeros. So it's like Trinity, but 000. So it's like, I don't believe in any of them. So you don't know.
Oh my God. That's exactly the kind of stuff that they say. But that's what Andre. I mean. Like, why everything they don't understand?
It's the same thing. It's the false Trinity that spoke of in Revelation.
Now let's think about it. You've got Andre, which sounds like Trey. The first number is a three. 3 + 3 is what? Six.
Oh my god.
Zeros. So it's really three, the tripling up of the six. It's the mark of the beast.
There you go. We just did our own demonology calculation right there.
We cracked
it. The reason why it's not even like, I don't know why you're defending them. It's because also part the whole thing about constantly calling things demonic also has a very dark history to it. Like, a lot of women died. A lot of people died because Christians constantly randomly accusing people of being possessed or witches or demonic. So in our modern context, that's not happening, but it's the same vibes. Well, it's not happening in a Western context, but actually in places like in other places in the world, people are accusing people of being possessed by demons and they are actually causing them physical harm. So it's actually a real problem. Like, you can't constantly call things that you don't understand demonic, or you can't constantly call things that have an association with Africa demonic. It's like an actual... And I'm seeing there's like a rise in at the moment, and somebody talked about it on Instagram. There's like a rise at the moment in, especially amongst Black women, in denouncing certain things and being like, that's demonic, and just like going really deep into like a very fundamental Christian. Yeah, especially in America, there's been a rise of people like denouncing all their Black sororities and like fraternities because they're saying that it's associated with like the devil or whatever. So there's a couple of Black business owners recently. I think one of them, there's a beauty company called, what's it called? That's going to really annoy me. Oh.
Insert here. Anyway. And it's
a makeup company. I think it's Beauty Bakery or something. And she basically was like, yeah, I'm shutting down my entire business to like be a evangelist or something. Like, there's been a trend recently.
This is what I'm talking about. Progressive. What, bro? She shut down her business to be an evangelist. What's the problem?
Let me finish. It is in a context of not just her, but like large groups of people doing that and also denouncing various things as demonic. So it's not outside of a context. In the context of things being like, this is demonic, I'm separating myself from this, and also the brand of Christianity that they're ascribing to is like very fundamentalist. So that is the problem. Not the fact that people are giving.
Isn't that a problem if you find it depends on what for instance, Jackie Hill Perry is what some people would call a fundamentalist Christian.
Yeah.
Right. But some people find her fine and other people don't. Why is it? But to me, it's like, why is it that? But what I'm saying is, why is it that because it doesn't align with everything that you think, therefore it's bad? Like, they might, because they will say the same thing about certain things that you believe. And I'm like, because my thing is, depending on what it is, can't you allow the space for people to have different beliefs?
Absolutely. Like, just because
so then if they can, then I don't know. Does it have to be that it has to be like a passer? It has to be an issue between, or it can just be like, I believe this. I believe this. Okay, cool. We don't necessarily see eye to eye, but we can. I'm not saying progressive Christians are all wrong or fundamentalist Christians are all right. I'm just saying it doesn't seem like there's ever like a mutual understanding of like, we see things differently, but we fundamentally want to believe. Yeah, we just believe, we fundamentally believe in God, but there's just things about our faith that we disagree on. I don't know.
But I mean, as Christians, like, that's all we've known. I mean, that's all I've known. Because you go to a Catholic church, you go to a Protestant Church of England church, you go to a Pentecostal SDA. Every one of them has different doctrines and different like fundamental beliefs. The question for me is how far apart and in what ways do our beliefs differ for me to go? And again, I think this is, like you say, it depends on the person. Because you don't have to necessarily all take my approach. My approach is always the be gentle, be graceful. And if I don't like you, I'll just separate myself without like pulling you down. For other people, I think there is a space and a need for people who are more forthright with their challenge and go, yeah, I strongly disagree and I think this is wrong. But it is a Christian thing. I think there's a lot of things that we're very judgmental about. We were just talking with Rach earlier today, and she was telling me that the youth at our church, so it's like the year 7 to year 13, so up to 18, 11 to 18 is a lot. And they did a silent disco where like the youth leaders were the ones running the songs, so everything was like clean versions, but it was popular songs because it wasn't just for the kids in church. So it's for the community, silent disco, people could come bring their friends. And they invited a Christian rapper to kind of close out the event. And at the end of it, the Christian rapper said, I think it's terrible that you are playing them secular songs. Like, it really brings down the spirit. It fights against the spirit that you're trying to bring in here. Da, 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 da.
Wait, did you say it on the mic?
No, I think he told the leader.
Oh, okay. I was like, that's a word.
That would have been brazen. But then to turn around and just be like, yeah, if you're going to do this, don't include me again. And I just said to Rach, don't invite him. Like,
I really want to know who the rapper was, but I'll ask you afterwards.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. But this is the thing. I just like, for me, yeah. Oh, go on.
My thing is, I think fundamentalism is in and of itself, regardless of what religion, so whether it's fundamentalist Islam, fundamentalist Christianity, fundamentalist Hinduism, we can see across the globe the problems with fundamentalism.
Like, can you define fundamentalism?
Okay, fundamentalism. I'm just going to read a definition. Yeah, sure. The tendency among certain groups and individuals that is characterized by the application of strict literal interpretation to scriptures, dogmas, or ideologies, along with a strong belief in the importance of distinguishing one's in-group and out-group, which leads to an emphasis on some conception of purity and a desire to return to a previous ideal from which advocates believe members have strayed. The term is usually used in the context of religion to indicate an unwavering attachment to a set of irreducible beliefs. The term fundamentalism is generally regarded by scholars of religion as referring to a largely modern religious phenomenon, which, while itself a reinterpretation of religion, is defined by the parameters of modernism, refines religion in reaction against modernist, secularist, liberal, and ecumenical tendencies developing in religion and society in general that it perceives to be foreign to a particular religious tradition. So that's basically it. So that can apply to a number of different religions. It's not just Christianity, right? But the defining thing in it is, like, irreducible beliefs, an unwavering attachment to irreducible beliefs, and defining in-groups and out-groups, so people who are in and people who are out, and the concept of the purity of the group. And it's been reactionary against liberalism, secularism, and ecumenical tendencies. So ecumenical, right. You know, the idea of like people coming together. So even within Christianity, like fundamentalists within the denomination will be opposed to joining hands of people within other denominations who are also Christians. So like a fundamentalist Adventist is very anti doing like, I don't know, a concert in which Pentecostals and other groups are there, or a fundamentalist Catholic is like, I'm not interested in doing a church fair, joint church fair with the Anglican church down the road to raise money for a charity because we don't mix with them. So it's not, it's regardless of the religion, because it exists in all religions. So fundamentalist Islam,
and all belief systems, and a lot of belief,
and
systems,
all belief right? systems, right? It's the idea, the thing that's dangerous is the inability to see nuance, the desire to constantly section yourself off from the rest of the world and to create barriers between different people. And so my thing isn't that, yes, we can have different beliefs, but I'm saying that train of thinking and that way of interacting with your religious text and interacting with the world around you generally is dangerous and generally leads to conflict with lots of other people. And most of the time when you see religious groups that it becomes violent, as in physically violent, it's the fundamentalist faction. Like, that's what happens, right? Because that's what it leads to. So my fear, and also part of that is also within those groups, there's also a lot of high control. So within fundamentalist groups, there's also a lot of control over the people within that group. So people, often when they leave fundamentalist religion, it's like, I wasn't able to do this. I wasn't able to go there. I was told not to go and interact with certain people. I was told to be careful who my friends were. I was told that I shouldn't dress this way, eat this way, blah, blah, blah. Because high control is always a function. So the reason why it's worrying that that there seems to be a regression to fundamentalism is because there's also an element of like, not brainwashing, but yeah, kind of like cult-like behavior in which people are heavily controlled in their behavior. And my thing is, do what you want, be what you want, but it's always dangerous when people are acting in ways in which their autonomy is
limited.
When they're encouraged to limit their autonomy and have a high level of control within an organization, like that's always a red flag for me as somebody who has been part of a fundamentalist part of my particular denomination. I see the red flags everywhere.
So to me, I just feel like a lot of this stuff is two sides of the same coin to me, because I just think it's a lot of things are just an illusion of having your own control when, I don't know, I just feel like fundamentalism and people being progressive isn't as different as everyone would make it seem. I just think they just end up being... No, they're
not true. It's just not true.
It's
really not true. No, they're not. I just think you're trying... I think you're saying that, but it's just literally like the research into it. Like, people actually do research. Like, it's not just... Fundamentalist high-control religious groups are not something that it's just like... it's not just something that's based on like, you know... There's literally research that shows why those particular groups are high control. The level of high control that you get in fundamentalist groups does not translate to progressive.
So
groups
what I'm saying, so it doesn't, more what just, I'm okay, but what
because
I'm
it's not, a fun, okay. It's not a function of the religion. It's not a function of kind of liberal progressive faith groups to have high control over people's dietary habits, the way they dress, where they go. It's not a function of the religion. There are other things that might be problematic, and I'm not saying there aren't, but I'm just saying that level of high control and that level of purity is not a function that faith, because it's defined, the whole point of the progressiveness is defined by not being literal and not being not having fixed beliefs.
I'm gonna bring in Harry here, because I think I hear what you're saying, but I want to see where Harry's coming in, because I've got other ideas as well.
I mean, I would have liked to finish what I was actually saying, but
yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, no, so the reason I say it's two sides of the same coin, I don't say they function in the same way. That's really not, and I actually feel like there's a difference between traditional and progressive, but traditional always just gets lumped into fundamentalism as well. Because when we even use the phrase reactionary, they're reacting against, yeah, I guess what they would consider to be liberalism or being progressive. But what I guess my point is, if people think that whatever their religion is should be followed in a certain way, like, I don't know, is it wrong for them to think that this is the way it should be followed? And if you're doing it in this way, it's not a good thing. Like, I just feel like progressives also feel like fundamentalists, the way they're doing their religion is not a good, it's not a good thing. The way it will manifest is in different ways. So fundamentalists will try and control everybody, and progressives will just try and have like, you know, you lot do whatever you want, which is also like, it's two different ways of looking at it. I think fundamentalism is dangerous in a certain way, but I think progressivism and liberalism can also be dangerous in a different way. It just depends. Like, from what I see on, like, I don't know, people that are on the left side, like the left wing of things, like left wing and white wing people, I would say I align more with left wing people. But at the same time, like, far left people also have a very purist mindset. Like, if you don't follow this thing, you are not, like, as soon as you say something that's even a little bit out of skew of what they think, you're no longer part of their thing, and they'll chastise you up and down wherever. So I'm like, I think it manifests in different ways, but they do similar things to me. Anyway.
But we're not talking about politics, we're talking about religion. And when we talk about fundamentalism, we're talking about a text. So you could technically, I don't know, I guess if there's a feminist that adheres to a particular feminist text and will never deviate from it, and within that feminist...
Here's the example of Dr. Umar, for instance.
Let me just finish. Within that feminist group, they adhere to a particular feminist text. If you don't adhere to it in a very literal way, you're excluded. You're part of, that is a form of fundamentalism. So that's what I mean when I say fundamentalism. Like, it's not, it's those core values that were in the definition. But I'm saying that when we're talking about religion,
regardless of which way it's translated, it's that.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is progressive Christianity, most of the time by definition, does, like, the adherence to like the text and the in-group out-group thing by definition is not included in that because of what it is. Do you see what I mean? And I'm not saying that it's without its flaws, but I'm just saying the problems that I'm talking about cannot apply both ways, because by definition one does not include that stuff, like, it doesn't include it. So specifically when I was talking about the whole demon thing, I was saying that the reason why it's a problem is because it's within that context of those fundamentalist groups. And I'm not saying that demons aren't real, or that spirits aren't real, or that we don't have to be aware of what spiritual things we're opening ourselves up to, because anyone who knows me, I'm a Jamaican, I believe in Obia. I believe in spirits. I don't, certain things I don't let in my home, I don't watch. Okay, when did I go to watch
Doctor Strange and the Multiverse film? Thing.
Walked out of Doctor Strange and the Multiverse because my Jamaican and the Christian me said, absolutely hell no. Are you opening up the Book of the Dead and calling up things and I'm going to be in the cinema? Goodbye. And that's everyone's prerogative to do as they wish, but I'm not a person. But
someone might call you fundamentalist, like, for being like that.
That wasn't fundamentalist at all. That's just my vibe. That's not me telling you that if you sat through that you're not a Christian, or that you're outside my group. It's just my spirit didn't take it. And because my spirit didn't take it, I left. And that's absolutely fine. And fair. I'm okay with people saying my spirit didn't not take something, and so I left. And that's fine. Your spirit is your spirit. Do with it what you will.
But you're more saying the issue with the fundamentals is them saying that you have to think the same way. That's your issue.
You have to think the same way. And if you don't think the same way, you're not a Christian and you don't have the spirit of God. And also the way that they're interpreting the Bible in order to make those assertions. There's a whole different thing with me saying, you know what? My spirit didn't take it. That's me. That's me saying that's for me. And I have my personal reasons. I think when you start reasoning something and you start using biblical texts and certain texts and things, you have to be very careful about how you use that text and influence people. And I think that is a problem with the whole demon. Even with Beyonce, it's like Beyonce's demon possessed or whatever. Okay, on what basis? Like, if you're calling somebody demon possessed or calling someone a witch is a very Nezzy,
we know how much overwhelming evidence there is for Beyonce being part of the Illuminati. Let's not pretend that the early 2000s didn't happen. We're not going to ignore all of the hard work that was done playing put a ring on it in reverse. Okay,
that was
So shout out to Four Runner Chronicles, man. Let him do his thing. If he thinks she's doing whatever she's doing, if he thinks she's doing whatever, she's doing whatever. You know what I'm saying? My thing is more, I think my thing has always been, and well, I think more and more my thing is just, I am just of the opinion that, like, as long as you're not trying to force somebody else to do things your way, mm-hmm. you're entitled to your belief. But at the same time, I'm like, I understand why you would, because you're passionate about what you believe. It's like, I could understand why a progressive person would want someone to believe what they believe, because it's like, look, this is clearly a better way than what you're doing. And the fundamentalist person would be the same. I guess, yeah, I don't know.
The place that I come from really is more like, I was once in the fundamentalist, I know what that's like. And I know how much more freedom and happiness and joy I have in this place. So really my only thing is, if you're fully happy and fully free and feel fully liberated to live your best life and be yourself in that vibe, as long as you're not harming other people, that's fine. But a lot of the rhetoric coming from that faction is also harmful to other people. Like, there's a lot of misogyny, there's a lot of homophobia, there's a lot of other things that are coming from that. And that's why it's also a problem. But for me, if you have a particular thing, for example, if you're like, I only wear long skirts down to the floor because that's what I feel comfortable in. Cool. Like, there's absolutely no problem. I'm not going to tell you to not wear your long skirts. I think it's nice sometimes to have your cheeks out. But if you don't want to have your cheeks out, I'm not here to convince you to have your cheeks out. Like, I'm genuinely not. I'm not here to convince you to wear a bikini at the beach at all. If you don't feel comfortable doing that. My problem is that when you start telling me that me wearing a swimming costume at the beach makes me not a Christian, and that I don't know Jesus, and that the Holy Spirit doesn't talk to me because I decided to wear a swimming costume by the pool.
That's when I start. You clearly don't know Jesus because you called him the Jesus. That's strange. I don't know anyone that does. Who calls him the Jesus?
I think I was saying something else.
The Jesus.
Tired of your closing down and policing Nezzy's speech.
My faith.
If she wants to talk about the Jesus, how much she loves the Jesus, she will tell you. Like, why could it not be the Jesus? How many times have I said, I love me some Jesus?
Loves Jesus. Okay, look, guys, hold up. So speaking of, we mentioned Beyonce. I know you guys wanted to talk about Cowboy Carter. So go ahead, have your love fest about how great Beyonce is. So we can just get out of the way and move on. Go ahead.
Why so bitter? Why so hateful?
No, the thing is, okay, guys, I just to clarify to listeners, I haven't actually heard this, and I'm very open to believing that it's actually a great album. I was told that it's her best album yet, and I've said to be fair, like, I think she's probably the best best superstar artist that there is
at the moment. Yeah,
I just really find the constant fawning over her just absolutely over the top. Sorry.
So I think Nezzy will probably have more in-depth opinions about it. My perspective on it is it is a good album. Like, I really enjoy it. I listen to it.
Just
like,
good?
Yeah, I know. That's enough for the church of
Beehive.
The Beyonce to come after me. But it was great. Like, I've already upgraded it. It was good. Yeah, like, musically, you guys know me. I'm not the type of person who'll be like, oh yeah, I love a whole album. I like songs. So if a song hits me, I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna save this song. And there's a lot on there. I haven't saved any from it yet because, like I said,
16 Carriages is actually a good tune, though. I like that tune.
See what I mean? Like, this is you find the song. She's I think what I like about it is the same thing we said about Kelly, same thing we said about Andre 3000. When musicians decide they want to go and just do something for them, whether or not it does well, Beyonce's at a point now where I feel like she doesn't need to care about whether people will accept it, will like it, will criticize it, whatever. She's past that. So she could, if Beyonce decided that the third act of this trilogy was a flute album, she also could do that.
She should. I mean? You can't copy Andre there. You got to find something else. Maybe bassoon or something. Little clarinet.
Nothing but tambourine. Nothing but tambourine.
Do you know what? I think that would be lit, you know? Just Beyonce with, like, a cappella with a tambourine. I can't lie. I think that would hit. She should do that.
Yeah, like with gospel tracks. I think she could definitely do that.
Everyone's saying they don't want her to do gospel. I'm like, why? She's cold on gospel. What are you talking about? Like, do you remember Fighting Temptations?
Yeah, I think she'd make a great gospel album, to be honest.
I ain't good enough. but he still loves.
What?
Yeah, she'd eat.
Yeah, so I didn't have that much to say on it. I think it is really good. I think it's really fun. I think she's going to spend this next two albums making all of the money on album sales and tours so that she can retire and disappear from public life.
You think so?
People
are saying that this is her last trilogy. I don't know, but...
I don't know. I think...
would. Like, what do you need... She doesn't.
Nah, but you have to remember, she's a musician. Like, that's what that's probably the thing I actually like about it, that she's actually a musician. When I say musician, not like she actually plays instruments or whatever. I don't know. But she like actually loves making. Like, a lot of these people, as much as people say, people are just in it for the money, a lot of these people genuinely like making music, bro. I don't know. I don't think Rihanna cares as much about making music like that, but I don't really consider her like a musician. But I feel like Beyonce genuinely, like
Beyonce's a musician.
Like Rihanna's not going to an open mic night. She's not pulling up. But I've seen. I think was it her and Glasper? Like she's playing with Glasper somewhere. Like Glasper, and she pulled up to an open mic night. Like I feel like Beyonce, if she wasn't like super famous, she'd be pulling up at like because I think she genuinely likes music. So I don't think this would be her last trilogy or whatever. I just think only because I just assume she's a musician. As a musician, when inspiration takes you, you're just going to make another album.
Mm. Yeah, I think I just wanted to say this album was so good. And then this album has made me more of a Beyonce fan than I was. And I think on a podcast before I said, Beyonce-ing was like a faith, I would be like an Easter and Christmas kind of Beyonce believer. Like it's not an every Sunday thing. This has made me more of a regular. This has definitely made me more of a regular. I'm definitely
this was your conversion moment. This was your sermon.
This might have been
your come to the Jesus moment.
To be honest. Because this album, and I think especially as somebody who actually sings, like some of the other Beyonce albums, because I know Beyonce's vocals are so good, I just wanted to hear more. Like I know you can.
I love on
I know
top.
I know you can sing.
Yeah, you're right.
But she was making pop tunes, and I was like, okay, it's great, but I want you to sing. On this album, she's singing, and I absolutely love that. Like, I have been inspired. The thing that makes me know an album is good if it inspires me to want to do a cover. Like, this album has made me want to pick up my ukulele and do several covers, which I am actually going to do. Because you guys know I love a ukulele. I haven't played my ukulele in a while.
Yeah, please don't do a bunch of Beyonce covers, though.
Why?
In fairness, Harry, you've not heard it. So
I've not heard it, but I just mean like, come on.
No, like, so I think that's a really, really interesting point that you make, right? Because for me, as someone who, like, I'm a self-described average musician and singer, and I recognize great music and great singing and great playing. Like the number of times I'll just repeat Harry's stuff or I hear your stuff. I'm like, bro, like, no, like I get it. Like even Jacob Collier's album with the Bridge Over Troubled
Can
Water.
Can we talk about that though?
Like that, I know I'm never going to do a Tori Kelly run like that. But sweet Lord,
that thing.
My God.
Yeah, man started practicing in the shower. He started trying to get a little
run. A great album or a great song makes you, as somebody who sings or plays, to want to go and like, it makes you want to go and create. I literally wrote a song. I haven't written a song in a while. I wrote a song or part of the song last week. And I was literally inspired by the country vibes. Like I sat down with my guitar. And I was like, this is why it's a great album. None of Beyonce's albums so far has made me want to do that, I swear.
That's dope.
But I pulled up my guitar and I was like, let me just... Do you know what I did? Harry, you know that group Valor that we used to play?
Classic! Yeah, yeah.
You know that song? Lay it down, lay it down.
Yeah, yeah.
I literally wrote like an extra bridge or a couple of bridges like to that song.
Fine. You lot have converted. I'm going to listen to this album. I'm going to listen. Because you told me about it, but I'm
going to... Listen to it right through.
Mm. Like, yeah. No, it. I'm a... When it comes to albums, I'm serious. Like, I don't... You know, you have to this is nothing.
And in again, like, that's not usually my vibe. I will go, oh, this is the song I like, and skip if I want, or play it on shuffle. Mm-hmm. I don't care. This one, I did listen to it through, and I was like, oh, you know what? This is just, it's a real fun story. Like, you just see the through line. The musicianship in it is there. And yeah, like you say, Nezzy, her really just leaning into the vocal side of country music. Well, chef's kiss. I also think her ability to bring in, because one of the biggest criticisms before it came out, when it was announced, was, oh, Beyonce's coming in, she's going to get all of this attention, but look at all of the other black artists already in country who aren't getting. She really put people on. Like,
She did.
She did work to put the people who were already in there but not getting recognition, she put them on. Which I respect a lot.
On that point, I mean, I'm not obviously a stan or anything, but she didn't need to. Well, when I say she didn't need to do that, she can make whatever the hell she wants to make. She don't have to do anything. Absolutely. I'm sorry, that's my opinion. Like, what does she have to do that? I'm like, that's black people's music. She can do what she likes.
People were saying that she shouldn't make it because there's already black people in country music. I was like, that doesn't even make any sense.
That's literally insane. That's ridiculous. If she wanted to make a jazz album, like, that's probably a good thing for jazz, because then it means that more people, like, that's my opinion on it. Like, I think whatever genre she makes, more than likely more people are going to go and listen to that because she's done it. So yeah. I don't know. It benefits everybody.
But what was really important was that she didn't just do the album and then, like, so she's got people like Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton on the album, who are like big names and white, but she could have stopped there. She brought on like lesser known, like there were people whose names were being thrown out because when she announced it, they were like, well, but listen to this black woman who's already in country and this black woman. And those are the people she put on. So I feel like her team did a very good job of actually listening to some of the challenge and going, all right, you want them to get their flowers? Boom, let's make sure that they're on it and they get those.
I don't think that, well, personally, I don't think that's how it would have happened. That's my personal opinion. I think she probably would have already been in country, like, she's making a country album. Let me see who's out there. I don't think the internet impacted her.
Actually, one of them said that she had said when the album was already announced, she was like, oh, I wish I could be on this album. And then she got a call afterwards.
I'll swear.
So it wasn't. Yeah, so Beyonce actually kind of like
internet's powerful.
So like,
I stand corrected. So internet's powerful.
I don't think it was because I don't know if she was aware of those people, but I think basically like Beyonce heard a couple of names and they were like young country like women. Okay. It was from the song Blackbird, and she was just like, she basically added them, put them on.
That's sick. I respect it.
It really
credit,
like,
credit is due.
And this, I think it's a. No, this is really triggering so many thoughts I've had over the last few weeks, because we've mentioned Andre, we've mentioned Khalees, Beyonce stepping out. The fourth person who I think I really want to shout out is Willow Smith.
Bro, yes. I need to listen to this record, but I saw Questlove post about it and I heard a snippet and I was like, this is hitting. I need to listen to it.
She posted a video to her Insta of her process of writing one of the songs. Like, she came in, like, laid down the idea, was just singing the idea out, then went in, played the piano line, played the drum line, and she basically produced the whole, what's the thing called? The thingy track. The
demo? Guide track?
Guide track, yeah. For the other instruments. She played all of the instruments herself, did the vocal line, all, and I was like,
on, Willow.
I really love that for her, and that she's getting her recognition as early as she is, because of the fact that we've seen her journey from she was what, 8 when Whip Your Hair came out?
She was what?
Yeah, 8. She was 9. I think she was 9.
Yeah, she's 9.
Oh, Whip My Hair.
Mad.
And like the fact that her parents, for all of their messiness, have done, in my opinion, such a good job of nurturing the talent in her and giving her that space to go, yes, you tried, you gave me an in through your route and your connections and your section of the industry, I didn't feel it. I'm going to go away from music for a little while, find my voice in it, and then come back. And despite being what people could call a Nepo baby, I don't think anyone would have any issues with the success that Willow's had with her voice and her sound. And just, it's beautiful musically. Like, it's not even my normal style, but you listen to a Willow song and you're like, this is great.
I think it's tricky.
People are criticizing her for being a Nepo baby, but I'm like, she can't help being, like, I
what's she supposed to do? Not make music.
She can't, at least be happy that she's a Nepo baby who's actually put in the work. So she has all the resources around her to learn to be a good songwriter, to learn to be a good musician. And she's taken those resources and actually done the work to become that. She's not one of those Nepo babies who's just like riding on the waves. She's not like a, what's the Beckham who takes crap photos?
Romeo or Brooklyn? That's one of the two.
One of them.
Romeo.
Well, maybe both of them. Oh my gosh. I was showing my husband Romeo Dunn and Christina Milian's song the other day.
That's a Romeo.
He didn't get it. And I was like, this is an absolute banger. And we turned the page and continue to verbally burn the page.
To be fair,
is an absolute bar.
But to be fair, I understand why he didn't get it. It makes so much sense. But I love Romeo Dunn was legendary, in my opinion.
Oh my God.
I get why he didn't get it. But fun fact, Jacob Willow Smith is on Jacob Collier's album doing Scream.
Yeah, Scream. Yeah.
Who?
Yeah.
Willow Smith? Okay. I thought you
were going to
say Romeo Dunn.
No. Yeah. The most unlikely collab, Willow Smith and Romeo Dunn.
No, actually, bring back Romeo Dunn. He was also very good looking. That's a good looking
man. That's a good looking man. He's not just because he's light skinned, he's actually good looking. So fair play to him. Sorry, because here's the thing, guys. We just said we're having a free chat today, but sorry, I'm going to switch the conversation in a mad way. Have you not seen what happened last night? So Iran obviously shot some missiles at Israel.
You really went?
Yeah, sorry, I went left.
Handbrake
time. Oh well, you lot don't want to discuss it. We don't have to discuss it. Maybe we can just do it as a new segment. Basically, Iran shot some missiles, and UK and US and the allies of Israel shot it down.
Yep.
You guys
and
can
in their hypocrisy. We're like, we condemn this act of aggression.
Bro.
I'm sorry.
No.
What Israel's been doing, has that not been an act of aggression? I don't understand.
No. What killed me was the UN thing. Israel going to the UN. They ignored the UN for time. Let's call the emergency meeting of the Security Council.
The literal definition of the friend who only calls you when they need something.
I said, wow, this is outrageous. This is absolutely outrageous.
I'm not well versed enough in Middle Eastern politics to offer too much of intelligent commentary, so I'm not going to say too much. Apart from that, I think Israel calling someone else an aggressor is a bit a pot calling the kettle black. But that's all I really have to say.
A bit.
So the way I've understood it, what led to it was that it is believed that Israeli missiles bombed the Iranian consulate. I'm not sure which country's consulate, but that's what led to the retaliation. And yeah, I agree with you that it's very hypocritical.
So they destroyed the Iranian consulate annex building adjacent to the Iranian embassy in Damascus, Syria, killing 16 people, including a senior Quds Force commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. So yeah, that's what happened.
There we go.
So Iran clapped back.
Correct.
So this
wasn't just a random, we're gonna just escalate things, because if there's one thing the Arab nations in the region are very good at, is not escalating things unnecessarily. The reason why Israel has been able to act with almost impunity in the region is because any intervention from any of those neighboring states could be seen as an act of war. And because Israel's a member of the UN and the NATO conventions, they would all have to get involved. And that is World War III triggering. This drone strike, because none of it was like armed, it was a load of drone missiles that were sent, easy enough to intercept. And for me, from what I've seen, there's an amazing kind of geopolitical analyst on Twitter that I was reading earlier. This wasn't a, we're deliberately trying to destroy. We're not deliberately trying to hit Israel, but what we're trying to show is that we can.
We can, yeah. That's what it seemed like. It was like, you man, watch out, kind of thing. Yeah.
Don't take me for idiots.
Yeah, that's yeah. basically what this was. It wasn't like I was trying to. Yeah, it was a not take me for idiot kind of thing. And Donald Trump, this is what I want to read out because
legend.
He retweeted a 2018 tweet that he'd sent to the president of Iran. Whoa, I thought.
Whoa.
Okay, I don't know why I called it. Call him a black girl name. I was like, the president of Rian. To Iranian President Rouhani, and this is all in caps, never ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer the consequences the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious! Exclamation mark.
Hold on.
So we all know what time it's going to be if Donald Trump gets the presidency.
Yeah.
Absolutely no time whatsoever. He is not standing on business.
I don't think, not really.
I don't think he's for it, really.
I just want you to know, Crooked Joe, Sleepy Joe, as we call him now, he would never stop Iran. He's best friends with Iran. I've heard that his Hunter Biden is possibly Iranian. But when we get in, I would stop Iran bigly. I would let them know that we are in charge and we mean business and they would never stop with us. Trump 2024, buy my Bibles.
So here's the thing, yeah? Like, with Trump, what I will say is that he's so box office, man. That guy is hilarious. I was watching a clip of him. So I don't know if you guys watch The Daily Show. But Jon Stewart is back on The Daily Show and it's amazing. I love it.
It's fantastic.
But I don't know if it was actually his segment, because they do, like, it's him and the best effing news team. They all each take a day or whatever. But they were showing some clips of Donald Trump, but he was talking about the Bible. Yeah. And it was it's an old school clip, but he was like, they were asking, like, are you more of an Old Testament guy? Like, you know, do you want to talk about your face? He's like, it's very personal. I don't talk about it. Okay. He's like, are you more of an Old Testament, New Testament guy? He's like,
I love them both.
He said, equally. I said, this guy is a legend. This guy is a legend.
Okay. You mentioned the Bible. You've been talking about how it's your favorite book. And you said, I think last night in Iowa, some people are surprised that you say that. I'm wondering what one or two of your most favorite Bible verses are and why.
I wouldn't want to get into it because to me that's very personal. You know, when I talk about the Bible, it's very personal. So I don't want to get into
verse that means a lot to you that you think about or cite.
The Bible means a lot to me, but I don't want to get into specifics.
Even to cite a verse that you like.
No, I don't want to do that.
You're an Old Testament guy or a New Testament guy?
Probably equal. I think it's just an incredible, the whole Bible is an incredible. I joke very much so. They always hold up the Art of the Deal. I say my second favorite book of all time.
What's your favorite verse? I don't like to talk about that.
Yeah, he said, I don't want to get into it. I said,
hold on. Did any of his team at least prep him with like, a John 3:16 that he could throw out?
Did they not think
anybody would ask him that question? It's like a sort of basic question. Like if you claim, because they already know that people question his Christianity, right? Like his dubious allegiance to Jesus Christ.
No, but the thing is,
everyone's questioning his dubious allegiance.
Not his side, so though. It's just everybody else's.
Yeah, so like, it's like, isn't the fact, like somebody asking him what his favorite Bible verse or what he likes in the Bible is an obvious question. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's an obvious question to ask.
Yeah, but it was easy,
Donald Trump's method isn't actually answering things in good faith. If I don't know the answer, it's not because I didn't know the answer, it's because the liberal elites are trying to catch me out. They think I don't know Jesus, but they don't know Jesus. They're trying to remove the Bible from the Pledge of Allegiance. It's not in the Pledge of Allegiance. You see, they've already started.
that's what I mean. It's like with Trump. Well, I was watching a clip and it's just like, he's such an obvious grifter, but it's like, it's so like, I think what he's done and what he's realized is so, I think it's kind of smart to be honest. He's realized
that his base doesn't care.
So it's like you have
they
to
don't
go.
Care.
Yeah. So you just go super big. Metal. Yeah, you just go full crazy. And it's like it doesn't like they'll eat up because there was a thing where so the Trans Day of Visibility fell on it happened to fall on Easter because they've just had it on the same they have it on the same day, but Easter happened to fall on that day. But then the conservatives were like, they're trying to do it on Easter, blah blah blah. And Trump was like, I can't believe Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe, which I actually think, funny enough, Sleepy Joe is a fantastic nickname and it perfectly sums up Joe Biden. It's actually perfect. Like, I can't lie, Sleepy Joe Biden is great. But anyway, he was like, put it on the same day. He was like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have a different day. We're going to call it Christian Visibility Day. It's going to be 5th of November where everybody, you could Christians, will go out in record numbers like we've never seen before. And I'm like, you literally use this as an opportunity. Instead of being like, you know, I feel like Jesus doesn't like that. He's like, we are all as Christians going to go out and vote for me on November 5th. I said, this guy is legendary because he's so obviously grifting. But like, he's doing it so like obviously that it's like, it's always weird to call it out because it's just like, it's just there.
Have you guys seen the film Civil War? Shout out to my husband who took me out for a romantic dinner last night and then to the cinema to see absolute bloodshed and leave me traumatized at the end of the night.
That is true love because you're going to be traumatized. Would you need cuddles?
Yeah. Genius.
3D chef, he's there.
It was actually so wild. Like, we went to this really nice restaurant and, like, you know, I got dressed up. And then we walked over to the cinema and he was like, he'd been like, oh, yeah. The night before, being like, are you fine seeing this movie? And I was like, yeah, sure. It sounds interesting. And then, like, the first few scenes, it was literally like...
non-stop bloodshed.
It was just non-stop bloodshed. Like, it was traumatizing. And as somebody who watches... Does anyone watch The Handmaid's Tale? Who's watched The Handmaid's Tale? You have to watch it. It's so good. Have you read the book, right?
No.
This is like core feminist text. As male feminist, you should have read The Handmaid's Tale. I mean, it's core white feminist text.
So let me add it to things I'm doing wrong as a feminist.
Yes, please. Please do. I mean, I'll forgive you. If you've read Bell Hooks and stuff, I'll forgive you. This is core white feminism text, though, like Handmaid's Tale. So, like, I'm used to a little bit of gore. This is basically Civil War is basically by the production company A24, like the independent production company. And it's basically set in America. Like, if basically for Civil War to happen in America, like, today kind of thing. But the really good thing about it is it doesn't show you in the film why they're fighting. Like, it's not like right versus left. It just shows you the Civil War. It doesn't make any mention of ideology. Which is really good, because if they'd done that, then obviously the right wingers would have been like, this is a left wing propaganda film, and the left could have been like, this is a whatever. So it doesn't do that. It just shows you the realities of Civil War. And in it, the president has been president for 3 terms because he's basically like taken over power because there's like uprisings or whatever. It's just a really interesting look at how dangerous it can become, like how dangerous rhetoric can become, and how dangerous it is when law and order basically breaks down to the point that people just take everything into their own hands. And there's one scene, I'm going to spoil it, guys. So I'm going to give you 2 seconds to like fast forward if you're listening, you want to watch
it. I can add a spoiler warning in the edit, that's fine.
Okay, so there's one scene where the journalists they drive up to this place and they realize... They basically get split up in two cars, and they go to try to drive and find the other car. Then they realize the car's parked up on the side of the road, and the two journalists are like out of the car. And basically, the film is following the journalists as they're trying to get to Washington DC to get an interview with the president before the insurrectionist forces take over DC. So anyway, they realize the two people are out of the car. Then they realize that actually they've been taken, like, not captive, but there's a guy with a gun and he's got these two journalists on their knees. And the guy with the gun, they kind of are like, okay, should we try and rescue them, or should we just like kind of leave them because we don't really know what's going to happen? So anyway, they make a decision to rescue them. So they walk over to him and they're like, hey, like, sir, sorry, we're journalists. Like, please don't, like, we're not on either side were just journalists documenting everything. And the guy basically goes up to them and is like, where are you from? Two of the journalists are like Asian, two are white, and one is like Hispanic. It's like, where are you from? One of them is like, I don't know, Florida. Where are you from? The other one's like California. And then the Asian journalist is like, where are you from? He's like, I'm from Hong Kong. Shoots him in the chest, kills him.
Damn.
Same, and then he goes to the other Asian journalist, where are you from? And he's like, shoots him in the chest, kills him.
I'd have been like, right here, sir. DC.
Yeah, and it's, the reason why it's so harrowing is because it puts a spotlight on how the fact that, like, actually, there are lots of people out there with crazy beliefs. Only thing that's keeping them is the current structure of, like, law and order in this country. That means that they can't just go around and just randomly shoot people they don't like. But how the democracy is such a fragile thing that when that breaks down and people have guns, it is absolute lawlessness. Like, there is absolutely nothing preventing people from killing you. And that's why the film was really traumatizing. There's absolutely nothing preventing people from randomly killing you, apart from the social contract, the very flimsy social contract we have with each other and with the police and with the government, that we're not going to go around killing randoms that we don't like.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a little segue, but go and watch the film. It's really, really good.
Wow.
And I think people were saying, is it irresponsible for him to release the film at the moment? Because
no,
just tell us now.
Like, it's the perfect time because it showed the realities of, like, civil war, and talking about civil war as, like, almost like, oh yeah, like, these people are spiking us into civil war. It's not a joke.
Yeah, the reality, people will
the
die.
Reality is people will die. And it will be bloody and gruesome, and there will be no law and order, and you'll absolutely, like, family members could be lost at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely no law and order. And I think it was a really good film.
And I think this is the thing. A24 have such a good record of the films they choose to produce. Like, they really stand out by not being like mainstream Hollywood. It's fantastic, the films that they have produced. And I think the tribal nature of the way that we just talk to each other and we engage with each other right now is horrible. Like, going back to what we were talking about with the fundamentalism versus the extremeness of liberalism, I think, yeah, I actually don't think there is any side right now that I'm like, yeah, 100% I back you. Because we're losing that nuance of people who can have different opinions on different topics. Like, when we talk about even this election that may or may not be coming up in the next 1 to 12 months, I think is the rough timescale we've been given. Like, my least favorite narrative from both the Conservatives and Labour is this rubbish about, if you don't vote for us, you're voting for Labour. Or if you don't vote for us, you're voting for Conservatives. And I'm like, I just need you to know that whoever I vote for, I'm voting for them. I'm not voting for either of you. You are not the de facto. And this pointless tribalism, I think the worst thing about that is that it's pointless tribalism, because neither of those are actually two sides of a different coin. Like, they're not different coins. They're two sides of the same coin that just happens to be slightly more to the left of one than the other. Like, I don't have the patience, I think, for the way Twitter works at the moment, because it feels like it's lost a lot of the essence of what made it great.
Elon has ruined that app. I'm so sick of seeing every single tweet. Every single tweet that goes viral, you can't even see the replies anymore. Like, I used to enjoy seeing a tweet and scrolling down and reading the replies. Now, the replies are not even anything to do with the actual tweet.
Trust me. And it's OnlyFans and random other videos. That's it.
The other day, I was at work and I clicked on a tweet and I literally, and also, like, now things that used to be marked sensitive content or things that used to be like
porn
used to be a bit more like I'd quit on something and it was literally like just a penis just in my face at work and I was like great so now my work like crazy. What is going on it's he's ruined that app he really has
yeah
I like threads
I'm not getting into it yet. I don't know what it is. Like, I feel like because it's linked to Instagram, like, Instagram, I'll be scrolling it and then I'll get, oh, these are threads that you might like. And I'll accidentally click on one and then, like, oh, actually, I think the UI is still not quite right.
No, it's not.
Like, it's very difficult to get into the threads.
I think so. But I think it's a nicer climate than Twitter. Like there's not, they don't have all the bots and people who have migrated from Twitter to Threads are people who tend to be generally a bit more like at the moment, it seems like a little bit less cray cray. So I've been having a look, like it's a more of a peaceful scroll.
Okay.
Rather than seeing on Twitter, I feel like I've stopped scrolling Twitter, especially when anything to do with race. The racists on Twitter are so unchecked now. Like before, because, you know, like when you reported things, I think people used to get reported more and people used to get shut down. Like
I mean, he's gutted the teams that do the, like the actual reporting. So
literally like there's, so, honestly scrolling through Twitter, if anything to do with race is not good for my mental health, if I read the replies, because there's so much racism that it's made me not slightly paranoid, but it's maybe like, oh my gosh, how many of the white people that I'm interacting with on a day-to-day basis are actually like the people on Twitter commenting? Because the English commenters on Twitter are so racist. Like some, and some of them aren't bots. These are like actual, they're definitely real people. They are so racist and they live in places like London and they live in Kent and they're saying all these things. Somebody said, oh no, here comes the seasoning police. That was the only funny racism.
No, I can't lie, yeah. But I always think those people are like black people in disguise. Because I don't think they...
Not that funny.
That's a black Twitter kind of thing to say, let's be honest. Like, yeah, I'm saying. That's the peak thing. Even when it's racism, it's only funniest when we do it ourselves. Oh, embarrassing. Aren't they embarrassed? But yeah, I do think about that as well. Like how much of this, the crazy stuff you see online. No, I think, do you know what? For me, it plays out in the workplace. So you see it, like, even if they don't, they wouldn't outrightly come out and say that, but it's just the way they interact, like with people, the way they suppress.
There's one woman at work. I know she's an op. I know she's, I know she is a Tory and I know she's an op and I know she's a racist and I have absolutely no proof.
No, but you just know. You know sometimes as black people, you just know.
I would put my head on a block. I would put up my child for auction to absolutely... Wow. I 100% know that woman is a racist. And I have absolutely no evidence apart from vibes, but I know that woman is a racist. That's not the only thing. The other evidence is that when we had to do like a work thing where everyone had to bring in their baby pictures... for the Christmas party, and I was like, there's probably no point in my baby picture because I'm the only black person, and she was like, yeah, just don't bother bringing it in. And that was her response.
You should have brought a whole album, like, guess which one, like
10 different black she babies.
Said, yeah, don't bother. I'm dead. Yeah. But you know what, I realized I clocked with white people. White people, you need to stop playing that game, or if you're gonna play that game, just say it's a white game only. I wouldn't even be mad, to be honest. But there's no, I don't like being part of these games. I don't like to have to be awkward and be like, oh, baby pictures. No, I'm not bringing in my baby picture, bro. Forget that. Or in fact, the only way I do it is if I just, like, I just coloured myself. I just do like a, I invert the colours in the picture.
I just think any diversity and inclusion, if people are really thinking about diversity and inclusion, that's exactly a game that people would be like, it's off limits, or they'd be like, we're going to bring in, oh yeah, we really want you to be included in this game. What I'm going to do is find a bunch of baby pictures from random people that are also black, like random black celebrities.
I can't and lie,
see
that's
if it
bad.
Will pick out your face.
No, I can't lie, that's mad. That's mad.
See, It's really funny because when you said that, I was like, "Oh, how could we switch it up?" Let's take pictures of our favorite holiday destinations as children, and we can try and work out. Like, you take out the people from the picture, and you try and do like a little context clue.
That's cute.
And it's just like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. this was a picture from Devon or Cornwall or Butlins, and you go. Yeah. Yeah. Whose childhood holiday was this? That, you take that out and you can actually just be like, oh, who do we think from our team would have gone to Devon a lot? Well, I know you're from Devon, so would you have gone there for like that kind of thing where you get to know people and you get to know their stories, because then you can talk about the holiday. Nice.
I like that.
Okay, no, so my idea would just to be, I just bring in a random white person's baby picture and I just say, yeah, that's me. I just Google white baby. I'd be like, yeah, this is me. Or I just ask ChatGPT, create a white baby, photo white for baby. Me from about 1993, and just
and then when anyway, they ask,
and
then when they ask you, is that really you? I had Revitalego. Yeah. I did not.
It's the opposite of what Michael Jackson is.
This week I watched, I was thinking how much I'd, oh no, I saw Regina
Hall and Sanaa Lathan.
Yeah, I saw her. She was talking about Boondocks and how she did both of the voices for Riley and Huey. And mm-hmm. I thought, this woman is a comedic, like, genius. Her comedic timing is excellent. Boondocks was fantastic.
Yeah.
Like,
by the way, it's not honestly, Regina Hall, it's Regina King, by the way.
That's not my Regina King. I always get the last name confused.
But Regina Hall is a comedic mastermind too, but
she's also a comedic mastermind too. But
they had to be.
Yeah. But I was like, it's actually, and you know who I also really, really like, who I feel like gets slated, but I absolutely love her, Monique.
She's funny.
Like, I stand for Monique. No, because the reason why I stand for Monique is because I feel like Monique knows her own mind. She stands on business. And whether you disagree with her or not,
whether that business is dumb or not.
One thing Monique is going to do is she's going to speak her truth, regardless of whether it's popular or not. And I respect it. And she will also speak her truth against the most powerful. I respect that.
And Tyler Perry. I respect it.
Oprah and Tyler Perry. I respect that. Because people in the industry are really scared to speak against people that can pull a job. Or, you know, she said, I don't care who you are. My truth is my truth, and I'm going to speak my truth, and I respect that. So shout out to her.
No, I did respect that.
Shout out to Amanda Seals as well.
Yeah, she literally went on Shannon Sharp, and do you know what? I can't lie, Shannon Sharp is going crazy this year. He's
100% for his interviews. I've not seen one that I thought this didn't need to be.
Do you think he's a great interviewer, though?
No, but his platform is great.
Yeah, his platform's great. But when I listen to his interviews, I'm like, I don't think Shannon Sharp is
the head
that
make you feel. I don't know.
I don't think he's a great interviewer. I don't think he's terrible. But I
do like Uncle Shannon, though, man. He's just Uncle Shay Shay. I like his vibe, man. But also, I think that, I don't know if you guys saw the Godfrey one, but Godfrey is so funny. Like, I'm sad that he's not like more well known. Like, he's just such a funny, like,
I know black, I Dominican.
Yeah, like him.
Remember what there was a series or a stand up set during lockdown that he was on, and I really thought like this was going to be the one that propelled him, and the fact that he didn't get more from it was really. Like, it's really sad because he is so funny. He's such a good comedian.
I think he will eventually. He has to. He's too, and another guy, Ali Sadiq, if you heard of him, he's just started to do, like, I think a national tour in the US. Another very funny guy. Like, he reminds me of, Chappelle, but he's got that same storytelling. Like, he can tell a story like nobody. That's the thing. As much as, you know, people will think what they want to think about Dave Chappelle and whether you like his stance on whatever.
He's funny. But
he's funny. Like, when it comes to telling stories, no one can tell a story about that guy. That's why it's kind of annoying that he's gone down the route that he's gone down. Because it's like, yo, if you just get back to telling your stories because you're so funny. Like, I'll never forget his OJ, Like, he does this thing where he does like four stories about that thing. It's hilarious. And he's just telling stories, but they're just so funny. Like, so yeah, Ali Sadiq, yeah, like, Godfrey.
Unlike Kevin Hart.
Kevin. Who is it that called Kevin Hart an industry plant? Or is it Cat Williams?
I think that was Cat Williams.
Cat Williams.
Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart to me, like, I don't mean to be.
He's a bit funny.
He's not unfunny.
He's not really, he's not
movies,
super funny though.
No, but when I say he's not funny, he's funny to me in the way that, like, I wouldn't say he's as naturally a funny person. You know, like, if you sat, you know that if Dave Chappelle just came over to your house,
you'd be in stitches.
You'd be in stitches. Mm-hmm. Kevin Hart, I feel like he has to try harder to be funny. It's not that he's not funny.
I'm going to give Kevin Hart his flowers here. Chocolate Dropper is hilarious. Like, when it comes to, like, oh, roast it. Have you heard of Chocolate Dropper? Nine bars.
I think it's a chocolate drop.
No, it's Chocolate Dropper. What's bro, that? I've watched his... It's Chocolate Dropper. Or that's both. It's both.
What is that?
It's like his character. It's like his rap persona. Yeah. But he is... No, I think Kevin Hart is funny.
I don't think he's not funny. I just think he's...
He's not as naturally funny as like a Chappelle.
He's not naturally funny. And
but
I,
he can roast though as well.
He has. He gives me very slapstick.
Yeah, he
a
is.
A lot of the time. I just... It's cringe. Like, I don't...
Yeah, whereas Cat Williams is actually...
He's not funny. He's just not... Him and Tiffany Haddish, I just feel like both of them, her and Kevin Hart, I find them annoying.
I'm going to interject there. I think Tiffany Haddish is levels below Kevin Hart. Like, miles and miles below.
I would agree.
Her stand-up special is atrocious. Her comedy, I think it's... There's no variety to it. Kevin Hart also has no variety, but Kevin Hart plays a funny person.
Yeah, he does.
Tiffany Haddish has no variety. Her character isn't funny. Her personality doesn't like make up for it on the other side. Like, you see Kevin Hart and his stuff.
Annoying in your life.
Kevin Hart and his stuff with The Rock, you're like, you know what? That is such a good pairing because of like, It's almost very traditional slapstick humor of the very tall, very muscular, very short. Mm. Like they play off each other so well, and they seem like they've got a real
like a rapport,
chemistry and rapport. Yeah, that works really well. And when you put them in movies, because The Rock plays the same person every time, Kevin Hart plays the same person every time. They know it works. It's a good formula. Tiffany Haddish. Sweet Jesus, like awful, just yeah, so not,
I
mean,
I watched her, I watched Girls Trip and I was like, she can be funny, but
was she the reason that movie was funny, or was the ensemble the reason?
I think the ensemble was funny, and also she's very small doses for me. Like, 100%. Do you know who's a great comedic pair? Rick Ross and DJ Khaled.
What? What are you talking about?
Rick Ross and DJ Khaled. That clip, I've come back to that clip more than once.
What clip is that?
When they're doing the thing with this, there's like a YouTube show and they're talking about their favorite snacks.
I haven't seen that.
you have to watch it. And DJ Khaled is like, but have you tried the almond milk?
The almond?
Oh, no. I've seen that.
And then Rick Ross is like, but is the milk from the almond or like, is it the peanut? I can't tell whether they're being serious or whether it's like
I think they're being serious.
I find DJ Khaled extremely funny. Like, I know he's a problematic but he's hilarious.
You remember that woman going on his live twerk? He's like, I got love, and he's that thing is so funny.
Sorry. Yeah. You know what always cracks me up as well, when he's like, why haven't I lost weight? He's like, I never lose, I only win, or something like that. It's so funny. Like,
no. Did you see what interview was it? It was what's the dude's name? David Letterman. Or was it David Letterman or another? No, it wasn't David Letterman. It's another. What's the guy's name? He's an interviewer from Larry King, and DJ Khaled. He's like, how did you gain all the weight? He just goes straight. How did you gain all the weight? DJ Khaled's just like, just eating.
And the thing is, because he's so successful, I'm like, he's got to be smart. So I'm sure part of this is like persona. I can't tell.
I think it's genuinely him.
I think he's genuinely like his jokes.
Yeah. Do you know, speaking of funny viral videos, do you know what video like Tony reminded me of the other day that is just so good? You know when like it's Kelly Osbourne and she was, it's on The View and she's like, who's gonna clean our toilets? Donald Trump. And then what I love, yeah, is that thing was that, oh, that's not, that phrase is one of the funniest phrases I've ever heard in my entire life. She's like, this is the way she goes, oh, that's not. It's so good. I don't know which one it was that said it, but it's just so funny. The way she looks so indignant, Donald Trump, and then someone just like in the back. Yeah, she thought she ate, and then someone in the back was like, oh, that's not.
If you kick every Latino out of this country, then who is going to be cleaning your toilet, Donald Trump?
Oh, that's not.
In the sense that, no. You know what I mean? Like, what I'm saying,
there's
that...
There's more jobs to be...
In LA, they always...
But Latinos are not the only people doing that.
Come on. No, I would never mean it like that. Okay. But I'm not part of this argument with...
I think what you're saying is that Trump himself
needs to look
probably
out
relies on a lot of these people that he's insulting.
Hilarious.
She was an activist with that statement.
You said Kelly Osbourne. I need to go to her mum because her mum has a contender for Read of the Year.
Oh yeah. Yes,
my goodness!
Sunday, thank you for bringing this up. I wanted to talk about this today.
I've got this already.
Can you read it out? Because I actually haven't heard this. I just saw that she said something.
Yeah, so I'll give you context. Sharon Osbourne and Louis Walsh are in Celebrity Big Brother. They've been a bit, to be honest, Celebrity Big Brother just feels like it's no longer relevant, so that show needs to die again. But they were criticizing Simon Cowell on it, and Amanda Holden, for some reason, decided to go to give a comment to the Daily Mail and take a savage swipe at bitter and pathetic Sharon Osbourne and Louis Walsh as she stands by Simon Cowell after they tore into him on Celebrity Big Brother. What I read to you now is, in fact, what I present to you now, and I shall put on my reading spectacles, is the filthiest read of 2024 by far.
Yes, filthy.
Amanda, I am responding to your interview with the Daily Mail on April 12th. I respect the fact that you feel the need to defend your good friend and employer, Simon Cowell, who is also your husband's employer, or so I've read. That's two sentences in. However, a couple of your statements regarding myself are factually incorrect. The statement, I hated seeing certain people in a reality show dissing Simon. He's the person who's given them all the chances, given them a lot of money and a lifestyle they probably wouldn't have had. The truth is, you don't know me, Amanda, or any of my close friends. You know nothing about my history in the music industry, my achievements, the artists I've worked with. Whoa. The shows that I've produced,
my God,
and my global celebrity, I might have to put like some church organ behind this.
Trust me.
Unlike you, the brand of Sharon Osbourne is known worldwide. Hallelujah.
She said, unlike you, you know.
Come on.
There are many countries that I could work in if I choose to.
Ooh.
However, I don't have the ambition or time to do so. Our worlds are totally different. Yes, Lord. I have been blessed with an amazing lifestyle throughout my entire life.
Shadabosi.
Before you were born.
Yes.
Repeat this again.
Before you were in your mother's womb.
Before you were born,
I was
living in a mansion in Beverly Hills and continue to do so
today. I
can't
lie. Stop. That line eight. What? Before you were born, I was living in a mansion.
Before you were born, I was living in a mansion in Beverly Hills and continue to do so today and continue to have my country estate in England as well.
My gosh.
Wait, so that means she was in a mansion at 18?
Swear.
Maybe she was.
But There is something you should know. I never discuss money, lifestyle, or positions of power. I find it to be classless and crude. Ooh. However, you've now forced my hands to divulge these things to you, and I honestly don't want to seem like I'm bragging. But the truth is, my money and my success were not due to doing a couple of Simon Cowell talent shows. He says, not his little things. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed doing them at the time as they were great fun. Yes, Simon paid me very well, probably more than what you're receiving today. But Ooh. All of that, my darling, went on a few handbags.
What?
At the time that I worked on X Factor, I was the only judge who had global accomplishments with multiple million-selling artists, Grammy Award winners, and arena and stadium headliners. I was also a very successful festival producer with Ozfest, which ran for 24 years, as well as a best-selling author and producer of the hit show The Osbournes, for which I received an Emmy Award.
Ooh.
Amanda, I think you are missing the point here. No disrespect to Simon Cowell, but he needed me.
So she capitalized that. She said needed me, you know.
He needed me for musical credibility on X Factor, and I delivered for him, and together all of us made a great team. It was only after several seasons of X Factor that Simon started to build his music empire, and I give him much kudos for what he built. As Dr. Umar would say, I give him much kudos for what he built. When I met my husband, I was already very well established in the music industry, having worked with bands like Electric Light Orchestra, Motorhead, Smashing Pumpkins, Gary Moore, The Move, Roy Woods Wizard, Lindsay DePaul, Britt Eklund, and Black Sabbath, to name a few. I think you must have forgotten my husband is a music icon who has sold 170 million albums, won multiple Grammy Awards, and is a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. We have been together for 44 years, and he has spoiled me from the first day we met. He has given me more than any man could. All of this before I ever knew who Simon Cowell was.
I can't lie, he cheated on her bare times though, so she can't really say that. But anyway, go on.
In closing, I must say, whenever I have seen you on TV, I always thought you were very beautiful and talented. However, never make comments about my lifestyle given to me by Simon Cowell. It's demeaning to me and my husband and all the achievements I have made in my life, as you're making yourself look like an ill-informed sycophantic. Sincerely, Sharon Osbourne.
And it's a sycophant, but anyway.
Hey, yo, I'm reading it verbatim. That was a sermon.
It was a great read. However, it doesn't beat Tiffany Pollard's read to Gemma Collins on Celebrity Big Brother many years ago. But yeah, that was it was a great one. It was long though. My gosh.
She had time.
She had time. So I don't like Sharon Osbourne, but yeah.
I mean, me neither. I feel like her and the rest of the Ozempic crowd right now.
Yes. I mean, I can't comment too much on Ozempic. Yeah.
Well, all I will say is, I don't give a damn about any of them. That's my personal opinion. But it was funny. Although Sharon Osbourne siding with Louis Walsh is
a racist.
He's a racist. He's an idiot. And he's also groped Mel B on thingy.
Oh yeah, and he's also an assaulter.
When I saw that clip, I said, "Rah, that's crazy." I don't care what sexuality is. That's crazy. Like, she actually had to stop and be like, "Yo, why is your hand on my bum?" I said, "What?" On national TV, yeah. We don't know. Crazy. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant, but it's never been confirmed because I always find that really
weird when people are like, when gay men feel like they can like grope women because they're gay. It's like other women can't grope me. Another woman can't come up to me and grab my breasts. So you can't do that either, and you're still a man.
You just can't touch people without their consent, bro.
You can't touch people without their consent. It doesn't matter who you sleep with, who you're attracted to, just don't be doing that. Especially not sexual organs. It's not cool.
Facts. Right. Well, anyway, that was a nice place to end it, right?
We finished with... Go on.
What I was going to say is, you know how I wanted us to do our ranking? We have discussed 4 different artists. We've discussed Willow, Beyonce, Khalees, Andre 3000, and actually, I'll add Jacob Collier.
Why do you keep calling Collier? It's Collier, man. Damn.
Collier.
No, sorry. It's Collier, Jacob Collier.
Okay, let me tell you something. Okay,
like Juicy Smollier, I'm
private school educated. We are gonna put a grave over every.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Okay,
Collier. He's appetite blacks. Anyway, go on.
If you were a concert producer or a festival producer, and you were gonna put those artists in on the same lineup, what order would you put them in?
What, Khalees, Beyonce?
Khalees, Willow, Beyonce, Andre, Jacob Collier.
Just so you know, there's only one correct order for this.
This is why.
Wait, what do you mean when you say order? As in, like, order of.
So basically, who's
it should go Willow, Jacob Collier, Khalees, Beyonce. Obviously, there's no other right answer. That's the only order you can do it. There's no other order. Because you can't have anyone. Oh, wait, did you say an Andre 3000?
And Andre 3 stacks, yeah.
That's 5.
Yeah. I added Jacob, so Jacob was the
first. Yeah, it would be Willow.
Okay.
Jacob
Collier. Khalees, Andre 3000, Beyonce.
Exactly. That's the correct answer. And that was it. Very easy. There's no other order. You could swap Khalees or Andre 3000, maybe, but nothing else could swap. Everything else has to stay exactly the same.
Yeah.
One thing I know is that you can't put anyone after Beyonce. That's crazy.
That's fair.
Anyone after Beyonce, and you can't.
For me.
Okay. No, you wouldn't. You're lying. You're going to say Khalees.
I wasn't going to say Khalees. Oh. Jasmine Sullivan is coming to the UK, right? And the tickets are 300, when I last checked, 300 and something pounds.
That's not completely accurate. That is not the price Sullivan. That's the price for a festival by DLT. Jasmine Sullivan, Sir, and Alex Isley.
Yeah. So, and I thought about it and I was like, you know what? I would. Like, I didn't, but now I sat on it, I'm like, I actually would pay £300 to see Jasmine Sullivan by herself, actually.
I can't lie, that's insane. I think Jasmine Sullivan is the best top 5 vocalist on the planet, I still would never pay £300. I'm not paying £300
For a 2-hour concert, I probably would.
No, for £300, I get to pick the set list. You know what I'm saying? You have to do expect what God allows from that Apollo recording. That's what you have to do, and you have to go through all this discography. Like, if you're a Jasmine Sullivan fan, you know what that was, and if you don't, then you don't. Exactly. See,
yeah.
Imagine clip is eating like 99% of vocalists now.
99%.
You know how eat that is
today to this.
She's
day.
11. And she's like, that clip is better than, that is like something that people would aspire to in their like 50s. That's crazy.
Yeah, she's great. Can we end by what we're reading or what we're watching or whatever?
Yeah, I'm watching The Gentleman and The Lincoln Lawyer.
What's The Lincoln Lawyer about? I feel like I've seen
it's just about a lawyer. It's like nothing too deep. Okay. It's just nice. Easy watching. You know what I'm saying? I'm not watching anything like that great. It's on Netflix. I'm not watching anything that's like great right now. It's just like all right stuff. You know, that kind of vibe where you're not really into it.
You're not having to think too deeply.
Yeah. Oh, what I did watch, what I really liked is Lupin. That was great. Flipping love Lupin. Even though it got more ridiculous towards the end, I loved it.
I've never watched a single episode on it, but all of the TikToks I've seen about that show, where it's just like, Lupin, you are a 6'3" giant black man in France. Bro. Take off the wig. We know it's you.
You know, bro, it gets ridiculous, yeah? But it's hilarious. It's so good. It gets ridiculous, but it's like, yeah, there's no way this guy is, like, to make this whole thing believable, he would have to be like some 5'9" average white man. This whole black guy thing that he's, yeah, no, sorry. I'm not buying it. But yeah, that's what I'm watching. I'm rereading The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. Great book.
What?
The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry.
Mm. Oh, okay.
It's by John Mark Comer, and it's a fantastic book. I recommend it to every single person.
Is it fiction, non-fiction?
No, it's non-fiction. I've read it once, and I...
What's it about?
It's about eliminating hurry from your life.
So taking more time to enjoy the moments.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, nice.
It's great.
Sounds good. Nezzy?
I am reading Night Bloom. Let me just find it. I'm reading Night Bloom by... I can't remember her name. Yeah, Peace Adoze Medie. I think that's how I pronounce it. Sorry, forgive me if I butchered that. Peace Adoze Medie. And it's basically a story of two cousins in Ghana. One of them is, I guess, from a quite well-off family. The other cousin is not as well-off. And the book is done really interestingly because she splits it into two. So one half is one side of the story from one cousin and the other half is from the other cousin from her perspective. And it's really interesting because the first half of the book, I was kind of like rooting for that character, being like, oh. And then when you read the other perspective, you're like, oh, okay. And it's a really interesting look at like class, family ties, immigrant experience, because it's set kind of like partly in Ghana, partly in America. Hmm. So yeah, highly recommend. Other book I'm reading is Field Notes for the Wilderness by Sarah Bessie. That's a kind of religious book about Christians who are like deconstructing, kind of like a guide in terms of spiritual practices. That's good as well. I'm also reading... Okay, I read multiple books on the go all the time, which is not always the best thing. I'm also reading Atomic Habits by James Clear, which
great most book. People probably already I need read. To reread it again.
Yeah, but it's very good. And I just finished a book called Before I Let Go by Kennedy Ryan, which is like a fiction. I'm also, I'm also supposed to be reading Transcendent Kingdom by Yag Yasi, which I borrowed from Harry from my book club, but I haven't started that yet. Yeah, those are my reads.
Nice. Your reading list is always really impressive, slightly scary, but like... So I think my reading list this year has been a lot more... It's been a lot more work-based and like actually upskilling myself and just learning so much more. So what I'm currently reading is The Culture Map by Erin Breyer, I think it is, which is just it's a look into how different cultures do work and what professionalism looks like based on the cultures that you are based in and around and that you grew up in. So it really deconstructs the idea of, for example, Western culture suggests what professional looks like in terms of how you make decisions and hierarchy and even things like addressing each other by first name in emails, which I know when I was first starting to work, that idea of saying, dear Nezzy, instead of dear doctor, whatever, right, would have thrown me. But it also talks about how, like, across, depending on where in the country, where in the world you are, how those different cultural norms work. Really interesting stuff. Good for actually building skills of leadership in general, let alone working in inclusion. What I'm watching is, yeah, like Harry says, I feel like my watching is now just for escape from the real world. So watching X-Men 97, which if you, I don't know if you guys would have been allowed to watch the X-Men. I feel like it's too close to non-Christianity for you lot. Yeah.
I think we were actually. I don't think X-Men was on the list of like anything that was kind of. No, it was only really Harry Potter that.
Okay.
Harry Potter got cut. Everything else was kind of calm.
But everything else was calm. To be honest, my parents, in terms of our reading, me and Harry were voracious readers.
We just read anything.
We read anything. I don't think they really kept. I think they were just happy we were reading. I don't think to be honest, they didn't vet our books as they should have done.
They could have done more.
They could have done more. Like, we read pretty much whatever we wanted to. So
that's fair. But yeah, X-Men 97 is currently on TV. It's brilliant. Brilliant TV. Even if it's like comic book stuff, it's actually just really well written by a black man. Nice. And also watching Physical 100. So started from season one.
I saw that come up in my...
Basically, it's like a game show competition where they get people who are all really fit in different ways. So like their bodies are like peak physical condition, but you have people who have trained it for like bodybuilding, people who've trained it for powerlifting, people who've trained it for like Olympic sports and luge, people who've trained it for military service, people who've trained it for like fitness influencing. And they get different sets of tasks and challenges to try to see who has the optimal physique. And if this was an American show, I'd hate it because they'd all be really self-centered and arrogant and cocky. But the Korean people on it are just so respectful of each other throughout the whole thing that you're like,
it's cute.
I love the challenge. I love the respect between all of you. It's great.
Physical
100, yeah.
Oh, okay. And it's a Korean. Okay, fine.
Yeah. I think it's the type of show that you would watch in quotations respectfully.
What do you mean?
As in, there are some very good looking people on it.
Like, oh, okay.
Respectfully.
I do have I never know how to say that word. Penchant.
See? Penchant. I told you.
For a tall Korean man, I must say. And not in a fetishy way, just as in like,
they are Yeah. Respectfully, I think you would enjoy the show a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. Respectfully.
Nice. Do you know what I started watching again yesterday, Waiting to Exhale. Such a classic movie.
Shoop.
Especially if you're a woman and you're just like, you know, pissed off at your husband or your spouse. It's just like a great catharsis. Waiting to Exhale. I'm not, by the way, at the moment.
No, like,
He's doing great, but
as the but black man, are, like that is a terrible sign because you walk in. Oh, what you watch? Oh, okay.
yeah, it's the scene where she burns all the clothes in the car. It's like, it's great, you know.
Very powerful.
And Whitney Houston is so beautiful.
Respectfully.
Yeah, respectfully.
So this has been Tales from the Plantation volume 57, a new style. We're not so heavy, we just enjoy spending time with each other. Are we still leading you to freedom? Hopefully.
Absolutely.
Black joy is freedom, guys.
Wow, that's powerful. We should have ended it there.
Do you want to take back the hosting? Is that what it is?
No, sorry.
We handed it over there. Yeah. And I've lost what I was going to say.
Sorry. You can just repeat what I said. Black joy is freedom.
And that has been Tales from Plantation Volume 57. Follow us on Instagram. Actually, you know what? Pause all the following for now. We don't know where else we'll post this. Feel free to post it on your Instagrams. Tell people to come and listen. We'll work out what we're doing with the socials eventually. But you can follow us individually on our Twitter/X or Instagram accounts. Harry, do you want to start yours first?
What? Plantation Tales. Plantation underscore Tales, I think. Something like that.
Good energy. Yeah. This is
how you really promote a podcast.
No, it's because you didn't give any pre-warning, so obviously now I don't know.
What do you mean? You should know that off the top of your head.
Hello?
Okay. I don't know what's wrong with Harry today. He's in a foul mood. My is TFTP Nezzy. But I often just retweet, so you're not gonna get too much from me. But feel free to follow.
Followers are always welcome. You can find me on TFTP underscore Tunde on Twitter and Instagram. Tunde is TUNDE. This has been an absolute joy. Thank you so much. And we will leave you with the wise words of Nezzy. Black joy is freedom. So for now, see you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Peace.